Welcome to the Influential Women Podcast, the podcast where we chat to some inspirational authors, broadcasters and campaigners who inspire and motivate us to change our day or even our life. This is Nikki Bannerman and my influential woman today is Stephanie Hurst. Hello and welcome, Stephanie. Great to see you again.
Hello, Nikki. It is a joy to be here.
Oh, it's great. It's lovely to see you. Stephanie's a multi-award winning radio and TV star, a DJ and public speaker and broadcaster on Hits Radio UK, Capital Radio, BBC Breakfast, BBC Leeds, ITV's Lorraine and is regularly seen on Channel 5's The Jeremy Vine Show and is a trustee and fellow of the Radio Academy. Goodness me. So how are you, Stephanie?
I'm good. It's a bit scary when you hear a list of stuff, because when you do the odd thing or when you do bits and pieces and projects or you work on radio stations, it's that job or that contract that you're doing. But when you list them all together, you kind of go, oh my gosh, there's a decent body of work there, isn't there?
Oh, it should be scary at all. I can't believe someone in your status finds it scary. It's just incredible.
Yeah, you do though, because you just, I think when you hear it kind of rattled off.
Yes.
You go, oh my gosh, that's a decent CV.
Whereas it is a flipping decent CV. You sound amazing. And look at you. You're in your, can you describe it? You're in your home studio.
I'm in my studio, yeah. During lockdown, everyone has built little radio studios or things because they've needed to broadcast from home. Now, I've always had something in at home where I've been able to record bits and pieces or transfer stuff or old tapes and bits and pieces. So it's really come in handy during lockdown that I can kind of just come in here. There's a decent microphone and everyone can buy these microphones these days because microphones used to be really expensive, didn't they?
But
during
amazing.
Lockdown, the prices have really come down. So
you look amazing. I can't believe you're at home. And I just saw Kenny the cat. Is it Kenny?
Yeah, Kenny's a cat. He's just... very needy because I was away. It was a friend's birthday drinks in London. Now, I don't drink that often these days at all. And I think I've always been allergic to alcohol. So if I sound croaky today and a little bit bunged up,
I love that.
Genuinely,
accent.
It's a bit Oscar. It's because I was drinking on Saturday night. And then it's not the next day. It's always the
it's
day
a few
after
days.
That.
It's not the water you drink today. It's the dehydration from yesterday and the day before, isn't
absolutely,
it?
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
So I think we de-croak today. We're
still... yeah, exactly. So me and Vocals on tablets.
Yes,
and, because the thing is as well, on Saturday night, it's the first time I've been around lots of friends for the first time in 2 years. So
brilliant.
We'd not seen each other. And it was like, this is... Saturday night, I guess, really was the first time I've been out for a long time.
Yes.
Because I've not put myself in real big social situations
We're all coming back out of our little shells,
yeah,
aren't we?
Slowly. So it was really nice to just see lots of friends and catch up with people.
Oh, it's special, isn't it?
Yeah, although I'm paying the price slightly.
So you've been back on breakfast, up early the last few weeks. What was it getting up again? What time did you get up? 3 or 4 in the morning or something?
3:15. So I used to I used to do breakfast show radio for a living. So I, for about 15 years, got up at the ungodly hour of it was about 4:30 my alarm clock used to go off because the radio station was 18 minutes away, the radio station was. And that was fine. I could roll out of bed, stick some comfies on, go into work, do the show. And that was great. And because the old show that we used to do on Capital, there was very little preparation involved. You didn't need to do much because there was 3 of us. And it organically just happened because we all were very different. And we all, I guess, brought something to the party, whether it was a story or something that had happened to us. We were very lucky with the old show. That we were very content rich. So, and we had incredible producers. So it just kind of worked. So there was very little prep involved. So I could literally roll in like at 6:01 or sometimes 6:02 when the show started at 6. And the bosses were cool with that. And just did the show and that was it. And it was great. But this time I've had 8 years away from breakfast and I'm just covering. So the amazing Flair East, does the breakfast show on Hits Radio.
Yes.
Nationally across the country. And I do a Saturday night show on Hits Radio. I do,
yeah.
It's
amazing.
This thing I started, I started in my kitchen.
Yes.
In 2015, 2016.
You were ahead of the game and Facebook Live and everything, weren't you? You're ahead of everything.
Yeah, so, and I started DJing in my kitchen because I've always been a bit of a futurist. I've always tried to not predict what's going to happen, but at least look forward and what's radio going to be like in another 5 years or whatever.
Yeah.
And Facebook Live first arrived and the algorithms worked in a very different way. So, and I'd got pretty good social media numbers. So I would DJ in my kitchen and really? Get, I don't know, 3,000 or 4,000 people watching. Then sometimes it'd jump up to 8,000 or whatever. Over the course of the week, when I left the video on, you'd get 100,000 views.
Amazing.
So this thing really started to gather momentum.
And pre-COVID, yeah.
Yeah, completely pre-COVID. So, which during COVID, that was a completely interesting time because obviously you've got a captive audience at home at that point.
Yes.
I just started doing it Saturday nights at 6 o'clock every single week. And I called it Kitchen Belters. So to me, a belter is a big 90s noughties dance anthem, something huge. Like You Live in Joy, Dreamer, Gala Freed from Desire, all that, those kind of things.
Fab.
I just started playing these, DJing in my kitchen. I had professional lighting up and I had proper graphics done. I can't do anything.
By heart,
pardon my French.
You?
No, you I can't do anything.
All or nothing,
I'm northern. Yeah, I can't do anything half-assed. I can't. If I'm going to do it, it needs to
do
be right.
And well, you can tell that from your studio and everything else. I mean,
I've always believed if you're going to do something, do it right. And my dad taught me that as a child. So DJing in my kitchen happened, and this really started to gather some momentum, which was fascinating because I would see the social media numbers. I'd look at the, but then. As I guess more people started to use live video and Facebook Live, etc., the social media networks started to kind of clamp down on how many views or how many people you was. So I started to see not the reach go down, but the amount of live viewers. I was still getting the reach across the week.
Okay.
And I was like, ah, this is interesting. Then I remember seeing Justin Bieber was doing a live on Instagram. Now, this is completely my case in point. Justin Bieber's doing a live on Instagram. He's got... In fact, I don't know what he had at the time, but now he's got, it must be over 200 million followers, Justin Bieber's got. And there was 25,000 people watching. So if you look at that in a pie, the percentage of that is not quite whatever. So they're not allowing you to get out. So I decided that I'd like to take this to radio, actually, and bring belters back, you know, to radio. Because I used to do it as a feature on my breakfast show, Belter. And we did, and we took it to Hits Radio, and it's now on nationally every single Saturday night across the UK, which is brilliant.
Exactly. So, look how much you've done. It's just unreal.
Yeah, and it's great to do that. And then from that, they said to me, Flair is off for a couple of weeks. Do you want to do the breakfast show? And I remember them asking me, I was like,
do you want to get up at 3 a.m. again?
In my head, I was like, yeah, of course I want to do it.
Oh, I
in
like
reality,
the sound
of it. Oh yeah, a bit of echo. Always got a echo. But in my head, I'm like, or on the outside, I'm thinking, oh, it means I've got to get up in the middle of the night again.
Yes, and no Saturday nights out. But you did it, and you've done, and you're back to being able to sleep in. But you haven't just won a few awards; you've won 15 awards. I mean, that is just phenomenal. How does that feel?
I had to put a shelf up.
I mean, that's a lot, isn't it? A lot of awards. I mean, people that have won one award. I mean, when you looked at all the music stars that were broadcasting from home and they just had one or two awards behind them, I mean, you could line up the 15 behind
you. There's been other bits and pieces. I've got honorary doctorate from Leeds University.
Exactly.
Fellowship from the Radio Academy. So
when you got the fellowship at the Radio Academy. That's where and that's a huge honour in the radio, you know, in the broadcast industry. That's the highest accolade you can get, to be a fellow of the Radio Academy.
That was a very, gosh, I don't know, I get choked when I talk about it because it's the highest accolade you can get within the radio industry.
Of course it is.
So I've always thought that I should be sent to prison for crimes against radio, to be honest.
Not at all. But you hosted Capital FM Breakfast Show for 11 years. It was a dream come true. Huge show to be on. Your first love of radio started when you were so young. You've got an amazing studio. I can see behind you but you had an amazing studio. I saw the photos on your website when you were really tiny, didn't you?
Yeah, I used to. So my dad was in bands. My dad fixed TVs for a living. But he was a guitarist in a band. So, you know, on a weekend to be off doing gigs. My dad had always got bits of equipment around. In fact, one of my earliest memories, my first childhood memory is I remember being in a plastic bath and then looking up and seeing this something that was black, very large and square, and then something leaning, something thin leaning against it. Well, that's my dad's amplifier and his guitar leaning against it. Because he always used to have it that way. And so even growing up, I'd see it. So that's, there'd always be guitars or amplifiers or something. And then my dad stopped. My dad quit the band and kind of dedicated himself to family life and working and keeping a roof over our heads and everything. So he'd got microphones, amplifiers, headphones, bits of equipment that he wasn't using. So, and I'd found this love of radio from, oh gosh, I don't know, seven, something
that's
like that,
so
six,
young,
seven.
Isn't it? Really?
Because I think radio is one of your first freedoms, isn't it? Because when you get your bike,
yes,
you know, you can go to the end of your street and then you get brave and then you go two streets ahead. You think you've gone on holiday, you panic and go home. Whereas radio is a real first freedom because once you get your first radio, you can start to tune around the dial.
That's
and
true.
You're no longer dictated to what your parents listen to. So I don't know whether your parents were listening to, might be Radio One Breakfast Show, but it may have been radio. It may have been Terry Wogan you were listening to. But when you get your first radio, that's when you can start to make your own musical choices. So
yes,
for me, twiddling
true.
Around the dial in the 80s, I was finding lots of pop music. But then I found Radio 4. Then I found the World Service and American Forces Network and all of these things. I was tuning around on shortwave and longwave. And it was like, oh my word, I'd hear all of these radio stations from far. Radio Luxembourg was nearing the end of its time, but I'd hear Luxembourg on 208, but then I'd tune into Simon Mayo on the Breakfast Show on Radio 1.
Wow. And this is all in your bedroom that you were literally...
Yeah, well, no, this is all on a little square radio, which is on my windowsill
studio.
Oh,
that's
still
where
got
you
it.
All
radio.
Started
the
your whole... But you literally had
there.
A job at the age of 12 in Leeds.
Yeah, well,
radio.
Yeah, so Radio Air... which was my local radio station. I just used to call them up all the time. And James Whale used to do The Late Show. And it was a very famous and big late night talk show he did on Radio Air, where he would speak to callers for 2 seconds. And if he didn't like the sound of their voices, he'd cut them off straight away. And this act that James had just gained huge notoriety and huge success.
Yeah.
That it became addictive listening. It became cult listening. So I was too young to listen to the, you know, from 11 o'clock it became all talk and a bit adult. And I was in bed by that point. But the first hour was a do-it-yourself dedication. So you could call up. Well, I got banned from calling.
No.
Because I rang so much. So, I've got tapes of me on there when I'm... eight
oh,
or
really?
Nine.
Is that
so
I was. So they gave you a job because you wouldn't stop calling.
Essentially, so I went in. I was around nine when I went in, and they did a tour. It was like they had a birthday party or something. There's a big massive field at the front, so they'd have a fun fair and all sorts of stuff. All the family come down with ample parking, and so if you'd like to park,
I love
your
the
ample
voice over there. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, so we went down when I was around nine, and they did a studio tour, so you could go in, and I think it was like 20 pence to go in or 15 pence to go in. So you go in, and there was a huge queue. My parents were like, "Oh, you can queue. Go on, stand there." So I did, and they stayed outside my parents, and I went in. I remember queuing and eventually getting to the studio corridor. So when I got to the studio corridor, there was a smell in that corridor and a good smell. It was like a hot air conditioning smell. The studio corridor, if anyone's listened to this and worked at Radio Air, you'll know the studio corridor smell. There's something about it. It's magical. I remember getting to the front of Studio One door and I'm just about to go in. So I was at the front of the next queue. I remember standing in front of Studio One door looking opposite Studio 4 door for about 10 minutes and making a decision there and then, I want to work here.
Well,
I am going to work here.
Young, you were so determined. Yeah.
And I can see it. And yeah. I can see it. And I can smell
it. In my mind's eye. Isn't that amazing?
But at 16, I rang them.
You got a job overnight. I mean, what did your parents say? You worked all night and then went to school, did you?
I constantly rang them and eventually got to go in again when I was 12 and never really left after that. I was in making tea for DJs, mullet haired DJs in the 1980s or late 80s, early 90s. And I was there one night and the next DJ wasn't on and I was on. That was it. I got the chance to do a live show.
And
and the thing is, you don't want to. And I'd been constantly giving the boss tapes, constantly giving him tapes. And he'd always said, no, you're not ready. Because there was always a spare studio. I was always in there just making stuff or practicing. The thing is, when you do your first ever show, you don't want to say the wrong thing. You don't want to cock it up, do you? You don't want to get an artist's name wrong. And one of the first records I played was Billy Ray Cyrus and Achy Breaky Heart.
Brilliant.
And called him Billy Ray Cyprus.
Well, that's understandable. Gosh, amazing. But you wanted to do Bruce.
Not really. I called him Billy Ray Cyprus. Which, there was no one else in the building to scream down the talk back in my ear going,
that's a country,
did you just call him Billy Ray Cyprus?
Oh, I did, yeah.
But I saw the studio on your website and you were creating radio shows, singing, jingles, editing, multi-tracking. You had a steely determination.
Oh, without doubt. I think for me, and I did, before I'd done that overnight show, I'd done work experience. There's an incredible guy called Paul Stead. He's an incredible TV producer. And he was a DJ and he allowed me to go in and be around the station. So I was allowed to be in that building and generally just be around.
Yes.
Thanks to other people that saw something within me, and allowed me to be in the studio and allowed me to learn how to use the equipment and break the equipment sometimes.
It was your dream come true, wasn't it?
I always saw, I remember being in on work experience and I don't think I realised it at the time because I'd got 2 weeks at Radio Air. The excitement was just incredible.
Off the screen, but
what I soon realised was I wasn't going to spend any time in the studio area. It was work experience. So I was seeing how the entire business worked. So I'd spend times in the promotions department or I'd spend a couple of days in news. I'd spend time in sales. I'd spend time, I remember spending some time with the managing director. So I got to understand how the machine worked.
Yes, of course.
And I think that's when my fascination with the whole bit with business and all sorts of stuff started to come to life. I wanted to understand how the entire machine worked.
So
it wasn't just being in the studio, it was the machine.
Yeah, exactly.
All of it. Whether it was being in the sales department.
Yeah.
So learning all of that.
All in. Yeah, that helped with everything.
That really helps with understanding.
Yeah,
so when you're on the air and, years later, you've got a breakfast show, it's huge. There's 1.3, 1.4 million listeners.
Incredible.
And you're working with sales and you're working with the marketing department.
Yes. You understand the whole structure.
And also, I was always very aware of, there may be some people who works in sales and they're having a tough month and they need to hit target.
Yes.
And they'll come to you saying, can you do this gig? And they'll say, it's not much money at all, but I need to hit target this month. Of course I will. Because you look out for each other.
Good for
You've all got to have each other's back.
Yeah.
Everyone, I've always seen that.
So tiny, didn't they?
Yeah. And I've always thought that I saw some, during my years of working in radio, I saw some presenters that were striding the corridors of radio stations like dinosaurs and treating people really badly and poorly. And I thought, I never want to be like that. So, and my parents raised me to treat people the way I like to be treated and have respect for others. So we've all got a part to play in the radio station, keeping this thing going. And that's how I see it.
It's very important, isn't it? But amazing, with your commercial hits radio show, you reached millions on social media, as you said, with your dance music. born out of kitchen belters, streaming DJ sets, because you DJ as well, don't you? And you were ahead of the game with that.
My dad always said to me, have a backup. Have a backup plan. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. And I think I do that because I've got a property business as well. So I do lots of property stuff away from radio and Brilliant. Public speaking. So I've never been one to just put all my eggs in one basket and think that this is going to last forever. I'm going to have a job on the radio for the rest of my living days. Not true.
Amazing.
Because things change.
Those values they've given you. And obviously your parents are a huge influence with you. You were saying...
Yeah, they are. My dad said to me that, always have a backup. And because I'd always enjoyed DJing, so I was banging on the door of Radio Air, but I was also banging on the door of my local youth club, which was around the corner from where
I
lived.
Brilliant.
And there was a guy called Austin who was the DJ at our youth club on a Tuesday night, and I remember going in and asking him if I could play some records, and he said, "Oh, you can do it next week." And I genuinely, that week, Nikki, was the longest week of my life because I just remember being so excited at the fact that I could turn up with my Rick Astley records or whatever.
Oh, yes. And did he let you?
Or my Yaz. He let me do half an hour and I smashed it. So I was on next week. I was on the week after.
So you knew what you wanted to always, do all the time. You know, there was never any deviation from that.
No. And I'd always DJed live. So I'd always had the radio thing going. But always been on stage DJing or doing gigs or something. Yes. So if the radio work wasn't coming in, there was always some DJ stuff coming in. So I was working in pubs, doing weddings and birthdays. And then I started working in nightclubs. So I've got these things going at the same time. And when they both come together, so when you're working on the air and doing a big breakfast show, that's when you can start to do gigs in nightclubs.
Yes.
So it kind of... And that builds your brand even bigger.
So you can stay up all night then.
we were
DJing and then go straight to the radio show. Oh,
yes, we did.
You've got some energy, my goodness me.
I haven't. Not now.
No. Well, the Influential Women podcast chats to authors, broadcasters, celebrities and campaigners about their work, their life, their mantra, their influences and challenges that help others with their lives. And you uplift others over adversity. You dedicate a huge amount of time to public speaking and you share your believe, achieve message. Do you want to tell us about that?
Yeah, when I was at school, I got bullied really badly. So I did get bullied, and I think the kids at school work out that you're different before you've quite worked it out yourself. And because I was a bit geeky and I loved radio and all sorts of stuff, I think I was just an easy target, you know, getting your hair pulled, getting your head kicked in, that kind of stuff.
Gosh.
And I just used to stay behind in the library, and we had a wonderful library teacher called Miss Rose. She's only recently, about 5 years, past 5 years ago, passed away, because she was like 104 when she died.
Wow.
So, and I think she saw a real vulnerability within me. So I used to stay behind in the library and she'd just give me books to read, and because I've always loved reading. And I was reading a book one day, and somewhere within this paragraph or whatever, I was reading something and it had these two words together. I wish I knew what book it was. And it just said, believe, achieve. Now, going back to what we were talking about at the start, all I wanted to do was be on the radio. And I'm making these tapes, giving them to the bosses I mentioned. So I used to chant to myself, believe, achieve, whilst tapping the middle of my forehead and pointing forward. So I'd be like, believe, achieve, tapping my forehead, pointing forwards. And that was I didn't realise it at the time, but that was a little mantra.
Yes, that's what I was going to say, it was a mantra.
I was chanting to myself. I didn't realise that at the time. And I think by believing, you can achieve, because I didn't realise that at the time. It's the power of manifestation, isn't it?
Definitely.
You manifest all this good stuff into your life. And I had no idea of that at the time. But I think Believe Achieve genuinely has got me where I want to get in life.
Really? And how old were you then?
Oh, 14, 15.
Really? And I'm really
sorry. And I was like, Believe
that
Achieve.
You know,
Believe
that Achieve. You had that bullying. And sometimes that sort of that setback, that challenge, gave you the strength to then come back from it that you were saying with the believe, achieve. And
it made me. I think the bullying, I mean, no one wants to be bullied, don't get me wrong. But I think it toughened me up. Yeah, I wouldn't change it. I wish I hadn't had to go through it because it was horrible. And it was continual. They didn't stop. But I think that definitely gave me, I don't know, a resilience. And my mum was quite tough as well. And my dad, I'm from a council estate in Barnsley. But yeah, that was my release, being in my little cobbled together studio.
But you go into schools, don't you, and help businesses with Believe Achieve and diversity and inclusion. And you talk about LGBTQ+ issues and everything, don't you? And you're such an inspiration to help people reach their potential in life.
Yeah, really. I think that, you know, we can have things that hold us back sometimes, and we can have, you know, situations in life that start to dominate your every waking thought. And I think for me, Believe Achieve, it's a mindset. And I'm not trying to, you know, there's so many motivational speakers out there and who do incredible work, but I'm not trying to flog any form of program or anything. It's a small little thing you can do. And I always believe that if you believe it, you can achieve it. Because I've done it. I'm living proof. Yeah. I very nearly lost my entire career. All of it. Every single bit of it went. Because I knew from a very early age that I wasn't a boy. And I changed my gender because I see biology sometimes gets drunk and it puts things in wrong places and it just messes things up. I knew from the age of 3 or 4, when I was at school, you know, they'd say all the girls go to one side of the classroom, all the boys go to the other. And I'd just go and sit with the girls. And they'd be like, no, you're over there. I'm like, what? Oh. So they put me back with the boys. And then they'd do it again. So, but that was my natural state of comfortableness. It was just default from my earliest memories. And I was saying to my mum when I was little that I'm a girl. No, you're not, you're a little boy. And all of these things. So, you know, my brain and my soul formed opposite to what I came out looking like. Your gender is what's between your ears. So we had to sort that out. But I think the bullies spotted that I was short, effeminate, like Sherko, geeked out about radio too much. So I was a target. I was an easy target. There was all these things going off in my mind, and radio was the escape. Radio was the sticking plaster. Radio was the thing that made it all go away for me. And then you get to like 14, 15, 16, and it's not going away, this thing. I think I just passed my driving test. I was 17. And I'd seen something on television about people who had transitioned, or as it used to be called, sex change. And I mean, that's a very now outdated term. See, I joke about this stuff because it's the way I deal with it. It's the way I...
Good for you. You know, and you've shown those bullies, Stephanie. And
yeah,
look at you
but
now.
It's not that. It's that I never wanted to be a victim. I never wanted to play a victim. This is not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing. I never wanted a 30-degree head of tilt of sympathy from people. It's just something I had to get sorted. And I remember going to my GP when I was 17 or something like that. I told him how I felt. I'd seen something on television. You know, if you feel this way, go and see your GP. It was on daytime television. And I told him how I felt. And his words were to this effect. It was something like, I strongly recommend you don't take this path in life. You'll lose family, friends, and you won't have a successful life or something. So I got back in my car, my Vauxhall Nova, and just burst into tears and just felt trapped. And I couldn't, I didn't know where to turn. There's no internet. You just feel like you're alone. There was nothing. You couldn't Google this stuff. You know, there was the odd person on television who, what they would do is try to make them look as masculine as possible by the presenter being placed in a chair further away from the camera whilst the person they're interviewing, who had transitioned, was close to the camera to make them look bigger. This is what media did, or what newspapers did, and anything like that. Take a really bad side profile picture of someone. And it was always a story that someone who's transitioned, who'd lost everything, because people who transitioned were at the bottom rung of the societal ladder. So all of this is getting, this narrative is getting pushed on me growing up. And, you know, all the way through doing breakfast shows, we'd be in the studio in the morning, I'd be looking through the morning newspapers. There'd always be a headline or something. There was always that narrative growing up. So I'm thinking, I'm trapped, I can't do anything about this. So radio's the thing that makes it go away. Radio's Believe Achieve. So I'm pushing Believe Achieve in the direction of radio here. And then I get to a point, Nikki, where I just can't do it. I just, you know, I've got the national top 40 chart on a Sunday to 6 million listeners or whatever. I've got the biggest breakfast show outside London. You know, it was 200 grand a year coming in. And as people said to me, you know, you've got a charmed life. And I haven't. I just wanted to be on the radio and I just worked really hard. But I think, I didn't realise it at the time, but I think to make all of the gender stuff go away, I worked even harder at radio because it was a distraction. It was a sticking plaster. It was the thing that made it go away. Some people will turn to alcohol or drug abuse for the release to make the problems go away. Whereas my drug was the radio studio and drowning myself in echo. Sorry.
I love your echoes.
Oh, everyone should have an echo machine. Everyone in their life should have an echo machine. At some point, have a go on one.
Love your echo machine. And the fact you've shared so bravely your internal conflict that you had and how you came back from that with your positivity, your Believe Achieve, and what you've done with everything in your life.
I'll be really blunt. And I'm going to be really blunt. So, but this is the way, and this is what I said. These are the words that I said. It's tits or death. I shouldn't really say that, but it's what I said in my head at the time. It's either do this or get off the planet. Do it or die. And all of these things. And eventually I went out for dinner or lunch with a friend of mine, Kate, and we'd been out for lunch. When was it? It was 2012. In fact, it's 10 years ago this year. It was in January because it came up on Facebook.
Yes, I saw you'd put that online.
I told Kate when we were at college together when I was 17. So when I first went to see my GP when I was 17, I told my friend Kate around that time. And then we'd not really spoken about it for a couple of decades. And we went out for lunch 10 years ago in January this year. And she brought it up in conversation. And she went, I've just been thinking, how do you deal with that gender stuff? She went, I saw something on television about it the other day and blah, blah, blah. Reminded me of what you told me years ago, which must have been a brave thing for her to bring up.
Yes.
Because at this time, you know, I'm riding the crest of a wave, you know, career's amazing, everything's great and has been for some considerable time. And she raises it and then I just go, I just want to die. I just can't do it anymore. And she caught me at a pivotal point.
Oh, thank goodness.
Which was the point where I was, I think she's probably saved my life.
Oh my goodness, bless her.
And so she forced me into going to see my GP. In fact, I sent her a screen grab of the Facebook post that said, taking the first step. And it said on this day 10 years ago.
Yeah.
I went, hey, lovely. I said, let's catch up soon. When are you free? I said, also, it's been 10 years since our lunch when you made me go to the doctors. Thanks to you, I am where I am in life today.
Oh,
I said, I love you.
I'm so happy now.
So she replies back to me saying, oh my gosh, is it that long ago? Although it feels like a lifetime ago. You just needed a little bit of encouragement in the right direction. And me being a bit bossy, if I remember rightly.
What a brilliant friend. She was really bossy. You're living your truth. Her bossiness literally saved you. And thank God for that.
It did. And I went to my GP and I went in, told my GP, who's now since retired. She was incredible. And she said, well, I know quite a lot about this because there's three people in our village who have transitioned. I'm like, where? I've not seen them. Because you don't. You don't see people that have transitioned. They just get on with their life. And they blend back into society, you know. So I think it's just, I think it's the way you carry yourself, the attitude you've got. I've always wanted, and I will support anybody and help anybody who is on this path.
Oh, how
fantastic. I genuinely will. And that's why I spend a lot of time going into businesses. So if there's anyone listening now,
yes,
you know, wants me to come in and talk and deliver my talk, whether it's a business or whatever, because I think for me, and I'm really open, I'm very open. You can ask me anything. And because when you're in a business or a conference, I've just been at BT last week doing a talk for them in Birmingham at their Birmingham headquarters. And I think, you know, when you've got a safe space and you're around people and, you know, you can ask me anything. I will answer any question.
Oh, well, thank you for sharing that. It's incredible.
No,
you
know, but
living your truth is so inspirational.
You've got to live your truth, Nikki.
You will help so many people. And you've said online it's the single best thing you've done in your life. And, you know, people listening out there from any setback or challenge or inner conflict or turmoil they're going through, to literally follow your path of believe, achieve, and know that, look at the happiness and how you feel.
The believe, achieve thing.
Incredible.
Is something that I think I'd stopped saying to myself for a time. Maybe a decade, when I, quote, blew my career up and walked away from the 200 grand a year job at Capital. When I embarked on this journey, I started chanting believe, achieve to myself again to get through this. This is why I think it's so important. And that, again, helped me to just keep on the straight and narrow and not listen to the noise that was around me. And there wasn't much of it. It was a little bit. You got occasional little bit of, you know, the odd person on Facebook. But usually I killed them with kindness.
Good for you. I love that mantra. Kill them with kindness.
Or an incredibly funny gag.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, what a brilliant way to deal with it, though.
Yeah, because, totally. Kill them with kindness.
No one else's business. You showed anyone, you know, who didn't believe you as a child that radio couldn't happen, And your career, you came back with your own show. You know, it just all of it.
Well, that was the hardest. That was the single hardest thing ever. So transitioning was that. I'm not being flippant here. For me, compared to learning how to do my job again, felt like a walk in the park. It wasn't. And I must certainly mean transitioning is not easy. It's not. It's difficult. It's painful. Why you would want to put yourself through it, I've got no idea. But you have to, because it's either that or death. Well, it was for me. And then I thought naively that I could just, well, I've done radio since I was 12. I can walk straight back into a radio studio and do this. I can. And then I started to practice and realised that vocally, this wasn't right, because as women are, the way we use our vocabulary is very different. The way we form words, the way we use words is completely different. God. So when I got back behind a microphone and I just sounded the way I used to sound, and that's not right, because as a listener, you make a decision on someone's gender by the voice. You can't see the person. It's really important that if you are a broadcaster, for me, I needed vocally to be in a range where I felt comfortable and the audience heard, you know, a woman on the air. And I got to, I was invited to do some shows at BBC Radio Manchester. I remember saying to the boss, I said, what's the show you've got with the lowest audience?
Oh, no.
And I think she said something like, I think Saturday nights, she says. And she offered me Saturday nights. So for me, that was great, because I couldn't do any damage because my confidence was on the floor. So I would drive home. So I would listen back to the show. And sometimes I couldn't see the road for tears in front of me.
Oh, my goodness.
So I had to pull over because I was so heartbroken in how bad it sounded.
Oh, I'm sure it didn't. But that's how you felt, no,
it did.
Wasn't it? Still
It did. It sounded appalling. So I used to sit at my dining room table the following day on the Sunday, listening back to the show with some paper. She grabbed some paper here. And I was literally with a pen, writing down. So when you talk on the radio, it's called a link, because you're linking two items together or whatever. So each link, I would write down everything I'd said verbatim on a piece of paper. I'd probably take two or three links. and then look at the construction of the words and how I use the words and how I formed the words. And then I'd give them to my speech therapist and then we'd work through those. And I got to a certain point where I plateaued and it just wasn't, I don't know, it just didn't sound right. Now I'm a perfect, as I mentioned earlier, yes. I'm a perfectionist. If you're going to do something, do it right. And I was like, this is not right. So I'd read and heard that one of the leading vocal surgery guys is a guy in Korea, in South Korea. So, of course, I booked myself a flight to Korea.
Really?
On my own. And have really? Vocal surgery.
You are, and no, you are so brave.
No, I needed to do it. So I needed to be able to get this, because this thing is
really
my tool.
This to is, you. And it was your vocally, career. And
it's my career. It's my tool. This is the thing that comes out of my mouth. So vocally, I needed to get to a place that I was happy with. And there was a risk that I could lose my voice completely. And then there was the rehabilitation and then learning how to speak again. And everything that comes with that.
You've been through so
and the exercises
so
and all sorts yes. of stuff.
And you must have been so frightened that you'd lose
no,
your voice after.
No.
No,
it was worth it.
You trusted.
It was worth it.
And a lot of musicians who've used their voice a lot and who've sung a lot do have to have vocal surgery.
Adele had vocal surgery.
Yes.
And, you know, there's
I think
so
Elton
many
John
people.
Did.
Elton
Several
did,
people,
yeah, yeah, nodules. And I'd got a vocal fold issue as well. I'd done an event with Gareth Gates. It was a big, we did a big party in the park, 70,000 people. And I'd shouted, I'd been on stage all day for like 4 hours. Gareth was, I think he'd come second in Pop Idol. So his fame was huge at that point. And I brought him on stage and I screamed Gareth Gates and I felt some excruciating pain in my neck. And I'd done some vocal cord damage. So there was something that was a problematic anyway. Anyway, aside the vocal surgery, I come back, friends came to visit. I couldn't speak to them, so I just got
a
whiteboard.
For a month not speaking, that would just be so frustrating, wouldn't it?
It's quite nice, actually.
Really?
Sure.
Very zen.
Just talk to myself. Yeah, very zen. And then slowly started to do vocal exercises, and it came back. And
thank
and
goodness.
It was great.
And
then I was given a daily show on the BBC in Yorkshire at BBC Leeds. I remember about 6 months later, and these texts would fall in occasionally from listeners. And you've got to remember that BBC Radio Leeds, BBC Local Radio, that their audience is much older than the audience that I would have been speaking to on Capital. So they wouldn't have come into contact with me before. And the name's different and everything. So there's, you know, the reference point, them got a reference point. So they're just hearing this mad woman on the radio being a bit random. But then getting to interview some incredible people and being on BBC Local Radio was a massive learning curve. I learned so much and worked with so many incredible, incredible producers.
Did you ever interview Shaking Stevens?
I did.
Did you really?
I actually did. I did. Shaky rang me, actually.
No.
Yeah, and it was during COVID. It was when COVID first happened. And I was, in fact, sat here. And I was waiting for a call from him, and he actually rang me on my mobile.
Really?
That must I was like,
have
oh my word.
Another dream come true.
Oh gosh, you've that was incredible.
Some, you've had some, I mean, we've all had highs and lows in our lives, in COVID and beyond, but your highs and lows in your
that
life
was,
have just
that
been
was crackers.
Off the scale. And Shaky was one of them, wasn't it?
So I would get the occasional text from listeners going, I've been listening to you for the last 6 months or whatever. I love listening to your show every single day. And I just Googled you to see what you look like. Because sometimes you do. If you listen to someone on the radio, you don't know what they look like. You're just kind of curious, aren't you? And then the listener would continue that text going, oh my God, I never knew your story. You were just a woman I was listening to on the radio. I just want to know,
there
oh my
you
God,
are.
You're so brave, blah, blah, blah. So I'm going, right, there you go. There's
you go.
That 15 grand's worth of surgery
exactly,
worked.
Exactly, that's what
Bosh.
I was going to say. That voice, you wouldn't.
There you
but
go, it
I,
worked.
I had never
it worked.
Realized.
It's husky today, but it worked.
Yeah, of course it would flipping work. So do you have a mantra you've got lots of mantras, but for living
believe
your
achieve.
Life then?
Believe, achieve. What's that? Believe, achieve.
Believe, achieve. Believe, achieve. Manifesting, and I think that's so true by everything you're doing. You attract from where you're at as well, don't you, in terms of
yeah, of course you do. Yeah, you I surround myself with funny, inspirational, I like friends who don't think in a binary form.
Fair enough.
I mean, I have got friends who think in a very, you know, who you know, keep themselves on the straight and narrow. But I do like friends who, you know, write comedy, or they think a little bit differently.
And you've got and humour, are a little bit bonkers. That's what's important for, particularly yeah. in this crazy world.
And I think so, humour got me through all of this.
I think so. Gosh, and getting you through probably lockdown and the crazy world that we're at the moment.
Yeah.
So what do you do hobby-wise or anything when you're not recording?
Do you know, it's interesting, actually. People have asked me, you know, have you got a hobby and stuff? Radio was my hobby, and then it became my job.
Yes.
You know, I do like to exercise. I go to the gym. I do run. I've still got my Vauxhall Nova when I went to my GP when I was 17. I still own that.
Oh, you've kept that as well. And your first radio. You need still a got Stephanie my first radio. Hess museum there.
Well, interestingly, my first ever record player, which was a Fisher. Did you have the Fisher Price record player when you were little?
I don't know what mine was. I bought one, and I wish I'd kept it now. One of those. Mine was like a fish tank.
Oh, was it? Yeah, mine was the Fisher Price one, and it used to play Edelweiss and Twinkle Twinkle Little Star and all sorts of stuff. That now lives in a museum in my hometown of Barnsley. Yeah,
as a
Barnsley museum.
Well, isn't
people
that
from our
got
town.
The history of yeah, everything so, there. Don't let so them have in, the car.
So, no, the car wouldn't fit in the museum. Well, it probably would actually, but I mean, I don't think you'd be able to drive it in. But yeah, I had it restored. So I couldn't part with it.
The greatest influence in your life, then?
The greatest influence in my life would be my parents. Yeah, my mum was... I'm part of the dead parent club. So I've lost them both to cancer. My mum... Yeah, it's crap, isn't it? It's just, there's no other word for it. So my mum, pancreatic cancer, 10 years ago next year. And my dad, 2 years ago this year, with bowel cancer, which he just ignored it and thought it would go away.
No,
it wouldn't. If you see any changes in your bowel movement or anything, just please go to your doctor. Mm. Please, just catch it early. And if, you know, struggling digestion with food and all sorts of bits and pieces like that. And, you know, my mum's GP fobbed her off 7 times. And by that point, it was stage 4 pancreatic cancer. So, and that's one of the hardest ones to detect. So, you know, I try and create awareness of both, you know, any cancers really, but the ones I know about because I've been through it with my parents is pancreatic and bowel cancer. But, you know, my dad took me to Radio Air when I was a kid. He would wait outside the radio station for me whilst I was inside for like 3 hours or whatever and drive me there backwards and forwards every week. My mum, you know, she gave me that fierce kind of side. She was a very, you know, my mum was a factory worker. She made bulbs for trains. Or she worked in a hot water bottle factory for a time as well, which I did actually as well during the summer when I left school, which was ace to work with my mum. And me and my mum were very similar in the fact that we clashed a bit. But, you know, during the later years, I used to go around and she'd cook me tea on a Wednesday night or whatever. And I remember talking about this because I've got honesty Tourette's and I overshare. And I remember my colleagues on my radio show, who used to do the show with Danny and Jojo, ripping the absolute mickey out of me. Because I used to go around to my mum's and I'd lay on the sofa with my head in her lap and she'd just stroke my hair and I'd have a little nap on her lap. And they would rip it out of me. But I'm so glad. And I took a couple of photos of me just laid on her lap, actually, which I cherish.
So supportive and parents.
Yeah, my parents were amazing. But also, you know, biggest influence is it's not just one person. It's a group of being around incredible, strong women. I've got a tribe, you know. I've got some of my best female friends. You know, my friend Debbie, my friend Victoria, my friend Catherine. I've got my friend Kate. I've got so many. I'm going to be leaving some out here and on. You know, I love you all. But there's been so many people who, you know, my friend Suze. There's so many people. They keep me on the straight and narrow. Yeah, they make a massive difference. Being around strong, influential women have kept me, you know, and the advice and everything they've given me is just, wow. I wouldn't be where I am today without strong, influential women. And number one in that is my mum.
Oh, how lovely.
So my mum was always she always looked amazing. And she always said to me, never
you
have a snot
look
in
your amazing. Your photos on your website are just gorgeous.
Oh, bless you. I stuck an unfiltered one on the other day on Facebook, just with no makeup on at all. Everything we stick on Facebook, we try and take the best version or the best photo or something like that. Or yeah, that was it. 9:04 in the morning. And I just stuck it on Facebook. And I thought, fantastic. Do you know what? That's me first thing in the morning. What you get. So, yeah. So,
any message for International Women's Day then for 8th of March as you'll be leading our next series out that day?
Thank you. Believe, achieve, ladies. You know, if there's never let anyone tell you that you can't do something. What I've discovered in you know, is the fact that, you know, men babies can be around us, pushing us down, but never let anyone push you down. Anyone. Believe, achieve. Anything is achievable. Trust me, it really is. And I know it sounds easy to say the words believe, achieve. But if you start to believe it and you manifest it, it can come into your life. It really can. And I'm not saying miracles will happen, but it's a kind of mindset. And I think sometimes you do need the bad stuff to happen in life. It's the yin and the yang. You need a bit of bad stuff because, you know, it makes you appreciate the good. With my life, it's, you know, it's not all been rosy, but I still continue with a positive mindset and I never let anything get me down. I have days when I don't want to get out of my PJs and I don't want to get off the sofa and I'll put my phone on silent and I'll turn myself off from socials because sometimes you need that. You need a Netflix day. You need downtime. It's not easy. You know, you have to put your wallpaper on and get out there every single day and face the world. That's not always easy, but sometimes, you know, I think hearing other strong, influential women give you that pickup. We've got to give each other that slap on the back and just, come on, you can do this. Come on, bird, you can do it, as my friend Sue says.
Come on, bird, you can do it. I love that.
Yeah, but it's having your tribe. It's having your tribe. Having your tribe around you.
Having each other's backs, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
As you say, lift each other up. That's so important. Thank you so much for that. So lastly, what message would you give to inspire and influence women or men listening out there? We have a quarter of the audience is men, actually, who love hearing influential women's stories.
That's amazing. I love that. Again, it's, you know, it's believe, achieve. It's, you know, and it doesn't happen overnight. It doesn't. I was around someone for a long period of time who was negative, and that person started to influence my thought process. That really does start you, it's not a good way to think. And I'm not a negative person, by it. I'm just not. You know, there's days, as I mentioned, that I don't want to get off the sofa. But that's part of Nikki, that's part of being a human being.
Definitely. And complex. As you say, with negative people, you can either be surrounded by radiators who radiate energy and positivity or drains that just negative energy that sort of drain you.
Yeah.
And that's so true. Yeah. And we need to all gravitate towards whatever lifts us up, particularly in this crazy world.
Look, the world is not an easy place. You know, it's heartbreaking what we're seeing happen in the Ukraine. And, you know, we've just come out of COVID. Just getting up and getting on every single day. It's not an easy time to be alive, is it? You know,
unbelievable amount of historic events.
Yes,
that have just been relentless. And I think it's keeping each other going.
It is. Sometimes I yearn for 1997 and a Nokia 3310 and basic internet.
And a Vauxhall Nova.
yeah, Vauxhall Nova. We live in a very complex world, but I think have each other's backs. Look out for someone. Ask them how they are. A friend of mine has just gone through a really big bereavement with her dad. And I saw her the other day, we were chatting away and joking. She's hilarious. I love her to bits. And I said, how are you? She went, oh, I'm fine. I said, no, how are you? And
well,
that's
because,
the bit.
Yes, it's the word fine that means you're not quite right, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That's what they say. You only use that word if you're not quite right.
Yeah.
So if someone says,
I'm fine, I'm okay. I said, no, how are you? And it's important to get that.
Yes.
No, how are you?
Good for you.
And then we had a 20-minute, you know, impromptu little counselling session with each other, helping
there
each
you
other.
Are.
But it's having your tribe. It's having people around you, having your back.
And believing, achieving. Oh, bless you. Thank you, Stephanie Hurst, for taking the time to talk to us, sharing your incredible life and your truth, your incredible multi award-winning broadcasting career with us today to influence and inspire us all. Thank you so much, Stephanie. You've been amazing.
Thank you, Nikki. It's been an honour to be on your podcast.
It's been an honour to talk to you. The Influential Women's Podcast is founded, hosted and exec produced by Nikki Bannerman, with editing by new assistant producer Dulce Godfrey. Please contact us to share your views and thoughts on Instagram and Twitter and our Facebook private group. And even buy our t-shirts. Please share the podcast with others to join our tribe and check out our website, www.theinfluentialwomenpodcast.com. Why not send us a message? Tell us what you love. Share with us whatever you're happy about. Please keep listening for more podcasts. Subscribe for free on Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon Music, and even Ask Alexa.
Does that come with Echo? Kick ass.
How about that?
Thanks, Nikki.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes.
You as well. Echo on. Cheers, bye.
Thanks so much, Stephanie. Lovely to talk to you.